Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, a conversation with Bart Millard. He's the lead singer of Mercy Me. He's probably the biggest sports fan I know in this music industry that he exists in. And so it's really great to have Bart back on. He's been on a couple times, and this is an opportunity to talk to him about his favorite team, the Texas Rangers, being World Series champions as spring training is well underway here in baseball, but also to have a little Christian counseling session on our mutual fandom of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I don't broadcast my fandom too much of the Cowboys. I don't, you know, cheer on these type of shows too often because I'm very mindful that we have a lot of friends and people who come on this show who play with a lot of different teams. I'll just say that. But my fandom of the Cowboys goes back to 1979. Bart's does as well in the late 70s. So we kind of had a little kumbaya session on just trying to navigate through the disappointment of being a Dallas Cowboys fan. It's almost 30 years since they last won a Super Bowl. It's also been 30 years since Mercy Me became a band. So we talked to Bart about the 30-year anniversary of Mercy Me, and does he still enjoy going on the road, which he is currently right now with Mercy Me? Does he get nervous, I should say? Yes, he still enjoys it, but does he get nervous? And how have they been able to stay together for 30 years as a band? It's pretty incredible. So lots of great stuff here. Wonderful stories from Bart Millard. He is the lead singer of Mercy Me. It's coming up in just a moment here on Sports Spectrum. I want to remind you before we get to our conversation with Bart about the Sports Spectrum magazine, our spring 2024 edition is coming out in a couple weeks. Now is the time to subscribe. You go to sportsspectrum.com. That's the website. You click the magazine icon. You subscribe, you do that one-year subscription. It's perfect for families, perfect for the kids, clean content, faith-filled, family-friendly sports content that is hard to find in today's world. Go to sportsspectrum.com, subscribe to a one-year subscription. When you check out, use the code PODCAST15, which gives you an additional 15% off a one-year subscription. I promise you, you'll love it. Great content. It's really our baseball issue that's coming out here in the spring of 2024. You're going to love the cover story. You're going to love the devotionals. It's awesome stuff. Go get your copy now, sportsspectrum.com. Put in that code PODCAST15 and save 15% off. You can order and subscribe right now, again, at sportsspectrum.com. Great to have Bart Millard back here on Sports Spectrum for Mercy Me. What is up, Bart? Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, pal. How you been?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm not as good as you, I'd say, because you get to go on tour and play some music and hang out with a bunch of fans coming up here soon. And your baseball team, the sweatshirt that you're wearing, is world champions. That's got to feel kind of cool when I say that to you, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's a, it's a feeling, I guess I was born in 72. I believe that's the year that they were officially started their season as the Ranger or whatever. And I didn't think I would ever see it, man. We were working with the Rangers doing this faith-based concert every season, right when they hit the World Series for those 2 years, 2011 and 10, maybe, or I got somewhere around them.
No, that's it. Yeah.
And was happy to watch them lose both of them. It was fun to be there, but it was very depressing. And so I was like, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I'm used to just convincing myself that it may not happen again.
Well, we got a lot to talk about and unpack here because we're both Cowboys fans. So we're going to have a session on the Cowboys in a second, just as fans, but it's kind of the good, the bad and the ugly with our conversations today, but the Rangers, like that 2023 year, it feels like last season it just came out of nowhere. And I feel like that's always the best. Like, your team's pretty good, but you have highs and lows and you never know if they can actually make the run to win it all. And that's the first time for you, I'm guessing, as a fan that your team has won a championship since maybe the Cowboys years, but pretty cool to see.
Totally. Yeah, it is since I was a freshman in college.
It's a long time. A long time.
Yes. I don't know if it's always like this, but I remember when the Astros made their run, they always thought it would be the next year. They thought it came early and I always thought, whatever, you can't plan it, but this did feel early. When DeGrom went down and it's just, it was like, oh man, maybe it helps because I started there like, well, it's just another Ranger season. Let's enjoy it while we've got it. And, but yeah, man, it's so much fun to watch. It was amazing because I've got five kids. I got three boys. My youngest is 12. My oldest is 22. And so all three of them are just in the sweet spot, dude, of just, and they're rabid Rangers fans. And, I raised them up well. And so that was a blast to, you know, hopefully it's memories they'll have the rest of their lives, is that us just dancing in the living room and going nuts and going to games. We went to probably 7 or 8 home games there in Dallas, and which is the most we've ever done while living in Nashville, and just loving it. And my 12-year-old is the most rabid, so I've got a few years left in the old tank.
Absolutely. Until you're like, yeah, I'm done with you and we're moving on here. Totally. Right. Totally. Well, where were you on the clincher? You said, it sounded like you just said you were in the living room with your family. Is that where you watched that final,
yeah,
that final out?
It was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I watched them, all of my boys. And then the night it was our anniversary. And I was, I thought, well, I mean, worst case, they win it tonight. I'm never going to complain, but I thought it was going to go the distance. So like, I got another game in me. And mm-hmm. So we went to a little resort like hotel here in town and just had dinner and that night. And she was gracious enough to let me prop my phone up at this really fancy dinner. So my iPhone sitting right in the middle of this really expensive steak, and just sitting over there and I'm watching. And so when they won it, I kind of stood up and just kind of paced the room. Didn't lose my cool, but yeah. And then my boys just blew me up. They're like, are you watching this? And so it was a pretty sweet moment, but I'll take it any way I can get it.
Totally. I feel like you're a better husband than me, because I probably would have said, honey, we're going to pivot and we're going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings with all the TVs and watch the game. Right. And I don't know if my wife would have agreed to that, but you're a better husband than I am, Bart.
She may have. I mean, I planned it. I never thought that was going to be the issue. I reserved this place so long in advance. I just thought, there's no way. There's no way I'm not going to book this because the Rangers are winning the World Series. Please.
Right. But it happened.
But you know what? I kind of feel like if I didn't, they may not have won. Maybe that was the jinx. I had to do something that big to push them over the finish line.
And now, yeah, totally.
So you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. We should, any Rangers fans listening, you can send your notes to Bart Millard. So we're in spring training mode now, and obviously the season's upon us. It's got to be kind of weird. I haven't had a championship team in any sport since 2008, and I've had one. That was the Boston Celtics. And I've had one, if you will, since 1986. So I'm 50. I think you're 51. It's been a while for me, you know, too. I'm just wondering, what's it like to be a champ and then go into the next season? Is it just gravy? Like, okay, even if we're the worst team in baseball, we just won the World Series.
There's a little bit of a championship high. Like, I mean, I'm keeping up with trades and stuff, but part of me doesn't care yet because I'm relishing in the fact that we just won. Like, there's plenty of time to complain, come back to earth, but like, I'm gonna enjoy going out to spring training. I'm some of the moves they've made, it's great, and you know, more importantly, like, this is the first time. Like, I know a lot of, over the years, this is our 30th year doing this. We've met a lot of athletes that are fans, and there's this weird connection. Athletes that want to be musicians that wish they were athletes. And so I've done it long enough to where most of the guys playing are either managers or retired now, but there's a few bats that have come up, and for some weird reason I've got, and it's never really been this way, but I have several friends on the Rangers. It's usually, you know, like, I'm good friends with Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers. My dad would turn over to his grave if he knew I was friends with the Steelers. Totally. And then when Doug Peterson was the head coach of the Eagles, we were buds. And I was like, this is, my dad is going to disown me if he was alive. It never worked out. I never had many Dallas Cowboy friends. But right now, the Rangers, man, I'm like, I've got several buddies on there. And that's what's been so much fun. And so as long as they're sticking around, which they are so far, I'm just going to enjoy the ride, man. It's so, especially in baseball, it just feels near impossible to repeat. And so – you know, I'm a realist, but enjoy being a champ. And you never know, man. DeGrom and Scherzer, if we can get everybody playing at the same time, we have a chance. Let me put it that way. There's always a chance.
I feel like the hope is what kills the sports fan, though, because the disappointment just, like watching the Super Bowl last month and seeing the 49ers fans, and I was rooting for Brock Purdy, and I was so excited for the Niner fans. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, you lose in overtime to one of the greatest players ever in Mahomes, and it's like all that hope is just setting you up for disappointment.
Yeah, it's
better when there's no hope, Bart. It's better when there's no hope.
Yeah, it's Ted Lasso. It's the hope that kills you.
Totally. Well, that's a great transition here because I need to talk to you about our Dallas Cowboys, which it feels like because we root for them and because the media sees the ratings skyrocket when they talk about the Cowboys, they're probably talking about the Cowboys, you know, all throughout the offseason every single day if they could to get those ratings high. And it's the hope. Oh, you know, middle of the season in 2023, Dallas is pretty good. Is Dak the MVP and this and that? And then everything falls to pieces in the playoffs again. Oh, yeah. We need like a Christian counseling session here right now.
Man,
I'm being a fan. Help me.
It's so aggravating. It's like, it's so frustrating. And it's what's amazing is speaking of my boys, they're young and you know, whatever that age, like especially my 12-year-old, he's just coming into like, I had to break him of the Madden football. I love the best player. Like, there's no loyalty. It's just because they play with whatever great players on that video game. I had to break him of that to where he is a diehard Dallas sports fan. But this is kind of one of his first few years to where, like, every win was like, we're going all the way. This is it. We're like, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, buddy.
You don't even know. You don't even know.
Yeah, just hang on. And he's like, man, there's no way. Do you see who we have to play to get to the Super Bowl? We've got this. I'm like, oh, bless him, you know. And and then when we lost, just the bipolar switch of like, I hate Dak. I hate the Cowboys. I never want to go back to Dallas again. Like, I was like, I'm seeing this kid hurt so bad. And we're all like, I'm not as bad as I used to be, but they're just like I was, man. They're ready to sell everything and never watch another game. And I think it's better to never hope at all. And I'm like, give it a few days. You'll be back. And sure enough, we heard Derrick Henry might come to the Cow. Like any rumor on the offseason, they're flipping out. Like, here we go. Let's go.
It's the beauty. It's like, yeah. It's the beauty of sports.
Yeah, it really is. And I love it. I wouldn't have any other way. Do I want to win? Of course. But it's like, I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, I don't hate Houston or Philadelphia. I do hate the Astros and the Eagles, but it's like it's not even a hate. It's like Batman and Joker. It's a nemesis. It's like, I love to hate them. I have to hate them.
Right.
I think it's when Jimmy Johnson in the Ring of Honor, he was like, he thanked all the people that hated the Cowboys. I love that so much because that's such a part of it. I'd be sad if we weren't in the division with the Astros, and I love to hate on them, and same with the Eagles. But yeah, it's just, it's all part of it. And it's one of my greatest joys in life is sports. It is the bond between my dad and me, and it's when we don't know what to say, sports will break the ice every time, and I love that, and it's wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah,
and I love the Cowboys so much. That's the thing my dad passed down to me. My dad, I remember he said we grew up in Dallas, and he was like, he was a Dallas Texans fan because the Cowboys were kind of the new upstart, and the Texans have been there a little bit before they went to Kansas City. And he used to go to the Cotton Bowl and see the Texans play. And so he said it took him a few years because he hated the Cowboys because it was Texans or Cowboys.
Yeah.
And then he came around and, you know, we're the same age. I have these, you know, every Christmas I wore the Roger Staubach and Danny White jerseys that JCPenney sold.
Yes, I have a picture of me on my sixth birthday wearing the Roger Staubach Cowboys number 12. Yes.
Yeah. And my brother, there's always that knucklehead brother who wants to wear the Washington or somebody else. And I'm just like, gosh, you're adopted or something. I don't know what's going on. But it, I mean, man, all of that whole era is such a part of me. It's something I'm here in Tennessee. People, do you like the Titans? Like, I mean, if they start winning, I'll probably cheer for them. But no, man, no, it's the Cowboys.
Still the Cowboys. Yeah. I'm married to a Tennessee Titans fan, even though I still live in Connecticut. So it's an interesting dynamic in my house. Yeah. We took a trip out to Nashville a couple of years back and let her see her team reign victorious. But it's a divided household. We're not all the same team, rooting for the same teams, which was interesting because when the Cowboys lost to the Packers, I don't know if I'm overdoing this when I say this. I was distraught. And I've been like you. I think I've been a lot better in my older age and certainly working in this business. You know so many people on teams that you don't root for, and you find yourself just rooting for people, right? And you're just so happy for somebody like Brock Purdy, right? Who had such a great season, and you get to know him and you get to know his family or any of these guys. And yet, when I watched that game and Green Bay just whipped Dallas, I mean, it didn't even look like the Cowboys out there.
Yeah.
I turned the game off at halftime. My wife's sitting there with me, and she's like, what are you doing? Don't you think they can come back? I said, I know they can't come back. I want to spare myself from being even more angry than I am now. I'm ripping off this sweatshirt. I have a Cowboy sweatshirt on. And I said, let's put on a movie. How about Back to the Future? And that's what we did. At halftime, we threw on Marty McFly, and I said, I need to watch something that's going to make me smile. And then, you know, she's like, well, how's the game going? I'm like, well, they're still losing by 30. Let's keep watching the movie. And then when I was done, I went upstairs and I put all my Cowboy stuff to the left side of my closet and said, I'm not touching it for a while. I need a cleansing here. So I don't know, man. I'm with you. Like, I think I'm better at it, but that one hit me harder than I think any game that they've played in a long time. I don't know why.
Because it was low hanging fruit. I guess we all looked past that one because there's no way.
Yeah.
And you know, part of me was a little concerned because they were saying it on every network, like, this is a shoe-in, man. There's no way. If Dallas loses this, there's something seriously wrong. And what's funny, at halftime, I stayed in the room, but I started like playing, I don't know, Candy Crush or something. I wasn't watching, and with my kids watching. And they were like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I was like, let me tell you what I'm doing. I was like, if there's a comeback, the only way it's going to happen is if I miss it. It's like, if I'm not witnessing it, if I'm gone somewhere else and they come back, that's the only time it's going to happen where I can go, are you kidding me? I missed the whole thing. I won't be there. So I'm trying to give them a chance to win. That's how superstitious and pessimistic I am about the Cowboys.
Which is so silly because when you meet these guys, you know this. They're just people. And they probably look at all of us, like you and me, and think, I'm glad you guys are fans, you're supporting us, but what's wrong with you people?
Oh, yeah, man, no doubt. It's funny. Like, I thought we would lose to the 49ers was the best case, because I just feel like they've owned us in a horrible way.
Yes,
like,
agree.
Like, And you have that team where you're convinced we can't beat them. Like, they beat us in the most embarrassing fashion. And I just thought, man, maybe the Lions. It was hard not to pull for the Lions once the Cowboys. I was hoping to. I'd love to see Detroit win it after the Cowboys were out.
Totally. They had a great run.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, we got the Packers, you know, see if we get them, then we'll go to, I think, Detroit. And I was like, I don't know if we should have won that last one, but we did. So we can get through that one. But I just thought, there's no way we're going to get blown out by the 49ers. That's how I felt about it. And it's over. Baseball season. Baseball season is upon us.
It is. The weather's getting better. You know, the crack of the bat, you know, the ball hitting the glove, all those good things that we both love about the game of baseball. I will say this, really, this is kind of a pivot a little bit. But I heard you in both of us. I think we've shared this on the podcast before. Both of us have very similar stories with our dads. And, you know, I can only imagine the movie. Everybody's seen it. I wrote my book, Live to Forgive, right around the same time, which is in references your movie quite a bit on this idea of forgiving your dad. And you speak so highly about him right now. And obviously he's since passed. But I love how sports... Because that's how I feel about my dad, too. There's still some things I'm working through with him. But sports is like the one connection that we're always going to have, good, bad, and ugly. And I just like how you speak so highly about your dad now that you can talk about, you know, the memories of the things that he really helped kind of bond you with that you can now pass on to your own kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not difficult to do, because as difficult as my upbringing was, you know, there was I would say maybe two years where he had cancer for a little over four, and about 2 years before he passed away was when this transition happened to where he literally became my best friend. Like, this dude fell in love with Jesus and you know, I mean, 2 years doesn't seem that long, but it wasn't like he did it the night before he died. Like, there was for me, there's a chunk of time to where like it was so sincere and I was convinced it was real. And then he was gone. And so it's almost like saying, I've said it before, like it's almost like you win a brand new Lexus and then about 6 hours after driving, okay, we're taking it back. And you're sitting in the rest of your life going, man, I would have done this and this with my Lexus. And so, you know, it's, you know, a lot of things, there are some sweet memories, not a ton, but if you ever notice, I usually talk about, man, what my dad and I would have been now. Like I do a lot of not wishful thinking, but I really believe like I know what he was passionate about and what he loved. And it's like, man, to be in a healthy place for that guy, this would have been incredible. Like if my dad was alive now with my kids, he would be in heaven, you know, watching them lose. He'd be in heaven just watching my kids suffer. Yeah. And yeah, so it's speaking highly of a future that's been given to me, I guess, in a weird way with where my dad is. I guess that's a way to explain it. I've never really answered it that way, but that's what it is. It's just how things could have been if I would have had that man longer.
Yeah. And the fact that you have, I don't want to call it a second chance, but maybe it's that word of being able to break so many of the chains that you kind of have to go through now that you've had. I mean, you mentioned you have five kids and, you know, the ages, they're a little bit older. Your oldest is 22. We're going to talk about him in a minute too, by the way. Yep. But the fact that you can now be a dad to your kids, and maybe you saw it this way, I know I did, that you had those great 2 years or those great last few years with your dad, but so many that weren't great. I know for me, I wanted to be exactly the opposite to my daughter the way that I was growing up. So I had this chance now to almost redeem, if you will, some of the curses that I'd had walked through when I was younger. And now I see that in my daughter, who's going to be 20 in June, and just watching her grow up. I don't know. You feel that way too a little bit?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, it almost to an unhealthy point, you know, a few years ago, especially my oldest son, Sam, when he was younger, you know, people always go, man, you know, you're in a different place and, you know, treat you like you're a super Christian because you sing Christian music. And they're like, you can do all the stuff that your dad didn't get a chance to do. And there's some truth to that. But the handbook I was given growing up wasn't the greatest. And so I still to this day have qualities that reflect my dad in the worst ways possible. Not abusive, nothing like that, but not knowing what to say or staying silent or, you know, seeing that they're hurting and like, oh gosh, I, you know, just, you know, have the silent dad type. And I used to beat myself up. Like I had this opportunity and wasn't taking advantage of it. A friend of mine years ago said, man, he said, the gift is not that, that you're going to get it right the way your dad didn't. Cause if that's your standard, you're going to kick yourself constantly. He said, the gift is being aware that you still have the opportunity to get it right. He goes, you're going to mess up, dude, and it's fine. He goes, and I'll tell you this, we may have talked this before, I can't remember, but I used to be in this men's group in my church, and the pastor and a couple of guys put it together, and it was a bunch of guys that have like high profile jobs, whether athletes, musicians, that if you go to a normal small group until you, it becomes a meet and greet sometimes. It's hard, you know. So he's like, man, we're just going to get together. And it's like, I mean, Barry Zito was in it. And you know, all these different guys, different, you know, Joel Smallbone. We were all in this group together for a while. And I'll never forget, this is right when the movie was being written. The question that night was, what's your relationship like with your dad? And I was like, oh, I'm going to win this one. So I don't know why I thought that, but I was like, oh, my story's going to win. You know, in fact, they're making a movie or whatever. And so they started going around the circle, this fire pit. You know, I told my story and then Barry Zito was like, man, my dad's my best friend, like my best friend in the whole world to this day, like never missed a game. I love this guy, you know, I'm just like, man, so jealous of him. And he's like, I spent a lot of money in therapy trying to get out from under his shadow and figure out who I really am. And I was like, hold up. Whether you got an abusive dad or the greatest man on the planet, we're still trying to figure out who we are. We're still paying the same therapy bills just to figure out our identity. And I was like, man, dang if you do, dang if you don't kind of thing. And I realized that, you know, it's, you know, we're going to get it right and wrong, but it's the struggle for the son just as he grows into who he's supposed to be, figuring out his identity. And we could do everything perfect or do it completely wrong, but by the grace of God, they still have this chance to figure out who they are themselves. And that's a beautiful thing. And I'm not saying it like, well, then why try or whatever. It's just like, man, just somebody told me the best advice about when Sam was born, about being a parent, was like, if you're worried if you're a good parent or not, you're probably a pretty good parent.
Yes.
And I was like, that's the best advice. Like, if you go to bed going, man, I screwed this up royally, or maybe I did something right, that's being a good parent, because there are a lot that don't care at all. And I fight with guilt and shame a lot, but I'm trying.
Of course. Well, you're human, just like we all are, especially as parents. Want to mention Bart Millard is our guest here on Sports Spectrum for Mercy Me. 30 years of Mercy Me this year. This is nuts when you think about that. And you get to go back on tour. Do you still get nervous, you know, when you go before shows and getting ready to perform in front of audiences?
I get nervous at the beginning of a tour when the set list and productions change. And once we get, it's like an opening night deal. Once we get that down, I probably need to be a little more nervous, like sometimes, like not that I just phone it in, but we cut up so much up to the very beginning of the show. We're guaranteed to mess. Our problem is we'll mess up just because it's really funny. And we'll hand out game balls after a show who messed up. So probably should be a little more professional sometimes.
It's all right. I mean, why has this music been able to sustain itself? And why has the band been able to sustain itself? I mean, you see it in any other realm of music. 30 years, it's very rare. I mean, I think you're a huge Beatles fan. I'm a big Beatles fan. And what they were able to do from 1962 to 1970, basically, or late 69, 7 years, and all their music, everything you ever listened to, is basically over a 7 or 8 year span. And you guys are on 30 years, and they were sick of each other 5, 6 years in. How have you guys been able to sustain this for so many years?
Yeah, I think I read once they hit Shea Stadium, it was just under 6 years.
Yeah.
Think about that. That's insane. And why the music sustains, I don't know if I could really answer that. Some of the best advice I was given, I remember when I was a kid, my parents divorced, my dad would work till 5. So from 3, I was one of those latchkey kids. I would walk from school. I would go to the church. It was closer that I grew up in. And from 3 to about 5, they had this, the sanctuary held like 800 people. And there was that piano and organ. And I would go in there because I loved how it sounded. It would echo and I would sing. I couldn't play piano very good. It was like chopsticks. But I just sat in the corner because I loved how it would boom in there. And I'd do it every day. And one day the pastor, kind of a side door by the office, was looking through the little window, and I saw him, and I got embarrassed, and he walked in. He's like, man, don't mind me. And he said, man, if you can ever do what you're doing right now, and he said, just be able to peel open your chest and show people your actual heart, they'll follow you anywhere. And I never forgot that. I'm this overweight, out of shape, goofy looking dude was like, all I had was transparency and to be sincere, even if it was like painful. And so we just decided as a band, whenever we write songs, if it doesn't move us, then it never leaves the studio. And if it connects with people, that's awesome. But if it moves us, it could, we had some songs that have not resonated one bit and no one even paid attention to, but it's still some of our favorite music because it did its job of affecting us. And so I think that's, we try to be sincere in our music and transparent. As far as the band goes, they're my best friends and I can't explain it. I've tried to quit in the past and we've gone round and round like brothers would do and stuff. But, we joke saying we just want to avoid hard labor, but it's to this point now to where I remember getting in the heyday back when Imagine first took off, I got so many offers to go solo because like, man, don't split this 5 ways or whatever and all that junk. And I remember the first like conflict we had, I remember like that just like dangling in front of me, like, well, maybe I should or whatever. And it took us to a beautiful place because I realized that the more, even when I considered it, our keyboard player had left, wanted to be with his kids. We went through a weird phase to where I got really upset because like I was the one, I feel like the one piece that, I remember Mike, our guitar player, he went to Kazakhstan for like a couple of months to adopt his daughter. And I was so angry at him because if I ever did that, 20 something people on staff would be shut down. The whole thing would stop. We could replace Mike as a guitar player, we thought. But if I went, it's hard to replace a lead singer. And I remember getting jealous that I couldn't make these big decisions and almost quit for that reason. But then realized, man, there's something very unhealthy about that. I'm angry that he's adopting his daughter. And so we just, like a family would, we set through it and just got to a point to where it's like a marriage. We've been through so much that now it's like, you know, I even said like, man, if God forbid something ever happened with my marriage or, you know, I can't imagine doing this again, marrying again. I'm good. And that's something like the band, like if we're done, I can't imagine like, and to this point, it's like, if somebody quits, replacing them would be impossible. Like, I just, you know, we've done it long enough. I don't know if we'll ever quit. We'll just do less shows. But we just love each other. We love being around each other. Like they're at my house for the Super Bowl. We're together when we're off the road, and like we're the guys that when we stay in a hotel, they'll get us our individual rooms, and we want roommates. We hate being alone, so Barry's my roommate on the road still to this day. And it's like we love being around each other, and selfishly, I mean, selfishly, yeah. Like somebody asked my hobbies were. I don't have any hobbies. I love my job that much. Like, I'm about to go on the road with my best friends like I'm a 12-year-old. And right. And so, how it's worked that long, I don't know. If you can't get along and you're not genuinely best friends, I don't see how it happens. I can't believe it's been 30 years. That's insane. But
I love
it. And we feel like we just don't – I mean, I feel old if I get out of bed in the morning, but we don't feel old. Like, you know, we don't – we're in a healthy place of not caring. We just want to make music we love, and it may play on radio, it may not, but we've been blessed with this opportunity to have fun doing it and do what we want. And these are the best years, man. I love it so much.
Well, we talked about parenting earlier, and I know you're a proud dad, speaking of music, because if my child released new music, I'd want to promote it more than my own stuff for sure. And I saw you posted it on social media about your son, Sam, has new music out. I think it's called Carry On. Yeah. Brag about him a little bit.
Oh, man. He's incredibly talented. He just turned 22. And man, I was 21 when I started Mercy Me, and our stuff was terrible compared to what he's doing. And it's been pretty cool. Like, we moved to Nashville when he was 12, and it was a hard time for him and missed all of his friends. And I gave him a guitar, and gave him lessons, and he became his best friend. And had no clue he could sing, but knew he was getting pretty good at guitar. And I remember like trying to sneak in and put my phone under his room, because I'd hear him humming something. He'd see it, kick it out, wouldn't let me hear him. And then one night when he was 15, we just let her have an Instagram account, I think. And Shannon, I'm getting in bed and my wife's hearing this dude singing. And I'm like, man, that's amazing. Didn't know who it was. And I was like, I would buy that. I could tell it was like a rough recording, and she's crying. I'm like, okay, now I'm a little worried. Who is this dude? Like, she goes, it's your son. And I was like, what? And just started bawling. It was so good. Like an old soul. And so just started kind of fanning that flame. And then it was Brickle, our manager. We would bring Sam out on the road. Our kids will come out on the road every once in a while. And Sam had learned Because He Lives, one of my favorite songs ever. And he learned on acoustic, and it was a really cool kind of new take on it. And Brickle talked to everybody but me and said, hey, let's let Sam sing Because He Lives, like open for us before like 10,000 people. And I didn't know. And I remember walking out, and I walking up to the side of stage, I don't know what I'm doing there. And I see Sam walking on stage, and I was like, what is he doing? What is he doing? Like, he did it without anybody knowing. Like, how could you pull that off? He starts singing. It was so beautiful. And I was so moved. And that he's super, super talented. He's got great taste. And so like his Christmas gifts and stuff from then on was like sessions in a studio or whatever I could do to help him. And now he's trying to run with it. It's kind of a weird generation. You know, for us, you and me, whether you play or not, we're used to, you know, guys, you know, playing in clubs or playing live a lot, hoping that they might get a studio one day. Man, my son has lived every hour in the studio, and he needs to play live more. So we'll take him out and let him do a song here and there. We have a song called On Our Way that he was featured on that was a single. So he'll come out and sing that in our set if he's out. And he works on tours, working with the child sponsorship. He just wants to be around it all the time. And And so he's getting, you know, those skins on the wall, but it's just backwards to me. It's like, man, it's like he's a genius in the studio, and he's so talented, and he's really good live, but it's like, you know, it's just, he's every time he goes on stage, it's better and better. So yes, I'm incredibly proud. This song Carry On blows my mind. It's so good. And he's so talented, and yeah, it's sometimes I feel like I need to back off, 'cause I'm, you know, it's like the kid whose dad's the head coach. I gotta let other people have a chance. It's like, totally. It's all I talk about. But yeah, he's super talented, and I'm just like, I told my wife yesterday, I was like, man, he's got everything he needs. It's the intangibles. Like there's he loves Jesus, but it's like, how do you explain it? You know, like I see Jesus different than I did when I was 20. And, you know, sure. And there's a wisdom, and I'm like, there's a switch that needs to flip on this dude to where, and I remember these moments that where I first time I ever led worship and people were singing these songs that I didn't write. I was just like these things that happened, like, oh, this is why I was created to do this. And I can see these little moments that are taking place, 'cause he's got it. And it's like, but I can't tell him that. He's just got to feel it. We just did a Mercy Me cruise, and we let him do a whole set one night. And he didn't have enough songs, and so he covered like Gratitude by, you know, Brandon Lake. And it's funny because they're all enjoying his songs. They don't know him real well. He's great. He did Gratitude, and the crowd just stood because they knew the song. And he's leading worship, and you can see on his face like, oh, this is so much more powerful than me right now. And those are the moments that stick with you. And so he's in a good spot, dude. I'm a huge fan, if you can't tell.
No, I would hope so. And I hope people go get his music and the song Carry on Spotify and everywhere else you get music, and certainly Mercy Me. Always Only Jesus was released in October 22, and you know you get this, so I have to ask it. New music? Like, when does that start for you? Because you're getting ready to go on tour as we're recording this, and you'll be on tour by the time people hear it. How do you kind of manage both of those, where you're on a tour and you want to do well with the stuff that you've already done, but you also always want to kind of challenge yourself to make more music?
Yeah, we're not one. There's some guys like Mike Donaghy that writes nonstop. I wish I was like that. I'm more of I need to know when the season's coming, and then I'll write in that season. I don't write on the road. I don't enjoy songwriting. I love the, it's like exercise. I love the results, but I have to usually go to a painful place to get something. And so it's work. But it's funny because like last week, like I sent out the text to the guys. It's like, it's time. Like I've got the itch. It's time to start looking towards a new record. Now that may mean another year or so, but we're on our third and last single for this album, and Always On Jesus. It just came out. So that's going to hopefully have long legs on that. And so my guess, if we were lucky, would be to start writing in the summer, recording summer or fall. Hopefully release spring of 25, maybe. It depends, but yes, it is time. Like I've got a working list of ideas, not sure if they're good or bad, but a ton of ideas that it's like, and so it'll probably be, we always tour in the spring and the fall, and we take the summer and the holidays completely off to be with our kids, and album season, just adding a little bit extra work. So it'll probably be over the summer. We're like, hey, let's block off a few weeks and work towards this. So I'm guessing that's the plan, but it is time.
No, that's good. Well, my last question, and I really appreciate the time. Speaking of time, what does time with Christ look like right now? You know, you have rehearsals and you have your tour, you're on the road. How do you stay intentional in your walk with Jesus when life is in busy Bart mode, if you will?
Right now, to be honest, one of my greatest joys is driving my kids that aren't driving, you know, to their tutorials, all this kind of stuff. And my wife's like, she's a homebody. And so I will put some miles, just my kids are classes everywhere. I love taking them wherever, because I feel like the first great step of independence is when they get their license. Everything changes when you can't drive them somewhere. Totally. And so I cherish that with everything, hearing about their day, even if they're not talking to me or their friend in the back seat or whatever. I love that. I mean, I genuinely love that so much. I really do. You know, if they want to be picked up at 3 a.m, I will get up in a heartbeat, just because I'll never have these moments again. And so half of that trip is always me by myself. I have become a master of the audio book and podcast and all that stuff. And And that's my, I guess you call it quiet time or whatever, but man, that's the moments I look forward to of just, you know, man, praying and just dwelling on everything. It's like I'm figuring out life's big problems, it feels like, at those times. And I rarely ever listen to music when I'm doing that. It's usually quiet. And I guess it's like a dentist doing a root canal on his day off. I'm not sure, but it's like, I just like it quiet. And I think with the ADHD that I deal with, sitting behind the steering wheel, I've got to focus or I'm going to kill myself. So it's a good place to sit still and think. And so it's been my, that's been my sanctuary for a long, actually, as long as I can remember. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do when I may not be an empty nester, but when Miles, my youngest, starts driving, I'm going to be like, man, I'm going to be lonely in a crowded house still if I'm not driving people around.
Totally. Totally. Well, what about real quick when you're on the road, there's intentional time, I'm guessing, with the band, with everybody that's helping out, all the staff and everybody that comes on to make those shows happen. I'm guessing there's intentionality on making sure it's not just work. Is that fair to say?
Yes and no. Like if you're like, we don't do Bible studies. We used to, and then we found ourselves like kicking ourselves if we missed a day, like punishment. And we're like, man, like, and so we started treating like what we do on the road is an overflow of a healthy relationship with Christ, we hope. Yeah. And so that time for us would be, you know, if the weather's right and at the end of the show, somebody will pull out a solo stove next to the tour bus and we'll sit around a fire pit until the bus drivers make us pack up and leave. And, you know, we may not talk about anything or just make fun of each other and laugh the whole time, but those have been, I mean, that's been our church in a way. It's just, you know, hearing how, you know, people's families are doing or that kind of stuff. And it's amazing. Our front of house guy that was our, after years, he passed away, 2 years ago. And it was amazing how, I don't think we realized how much of a bond we had because he was the center of that circle for so long. And when he was gone, just the moments we sat together and the tears that we cried, and it was like, it was losing a family member. I mean, we, for the most part, our crew has been the same for 10, 15, 20 years. Like we're pretty loyal we're more about it. We don't care if you're the best light guy, you have to be the best hang. So our whole crew will vote someone in or out. Like we love this guy, even if he's terrible, cause he fits. And it's just, that's how much of a family it is. And so those moments are valuable to us. And that's been, it's been better than church, to be honest with you.
No, that's good. Mercy Me back on tour this spring in a city near you. Make sure you check the website and everywhere to see if they're coming. I know they're coming to Indianapolis, where my daughter will be. You got to get to Connecticut. Can we work on that for the fall or the next tour?
Yeah, yes.
Is that possible?
We will. Yes. Okay. We were there not long ago.
I know you were. I happened to be in Indiana at the time you were in Connecticut. So it just didn't work. I'm in Indiana because my daughter is based in Indiana. She goes to college there. So
maybe you should visit her when we're in Indianapolis. How about that?
Right. Yeah. Let's make sure I work on that. I think it's in April, so we'll have to figure that out. But my brother, thank you. I appreciate you, Bart. Great to catch up, talk sports, and talk 30 years of Mercy Me. So congratulations and God bless you, brother. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, man. Anytime. I appreciate it, pal.
And many thanks to Bart Millard for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. And he's just great. Like I could have him on once a week and we could talk sports. And we actually stayed on another, I think, 15 minutes and reminisced about some early days of being a sports fan with baseball and with football. So I wish I could have kept recording. That would have been fun for you to hear. But I just love Bart. I got to meet him many years ago, in 2012, I think it was, when he was coming to the Connecticut area for a concert, and somehow we got connected and he wanted to see ESPN and take a tour of the facility. So I gave him and I gave Barry Grawl and the rest of the team, Daniel and so many others, a tour of ESPN. And we just became friends since then and stayed in touch. I've got to see them in concert a few times. And I'll just never forget when he came to ESPN, how excited he was to see the worldwide leader in sports. And that day, Darren Woodson happened to be working, the three-time Super Bowl champion of the Dallas Cowboys, happened to be working, and I had known Darren and introduced Darren to Bart, and he was kind of excited that he got to meet a longtime Dallas Cowboys player as a Cowboys. It was just a great day, and I'm just so glad and grateful that that Bart and I have connected, and he's just the best. And their music, Mercy Me, is just amazing, and it's touched so many lives. That song, I Can Only Imagine, I still hear it to this day and shake my head on how beautiful it is. And 30 years of music for Mercy Me. How great is that? So we appreciate Bart for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. Remember, you can go to our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content, articles and devotionals, podcasts. This interview is over at sportsspectrum.com. And of course, you get this on Apple or Spotify, wherever. Wherever you are listening, please click that subscribe or that follow button so that you don't miss any more episodes of Sports Spectrum's podcast. We usually talk athletes, coaches, broadcasters, and sometimes we welcome the music world as well with people like our friend Bart Millard. But make sure you subscribe and follow. That way you don't miss any more episodes. And then just tell someone, if you could. Tell them about Sports Spectrum. Let them know that we exist. Let them know that there is conversations happening in the world of sports, intersecting with Jesus. Anything you can do to share the gospel, that's what we're about. And usually I see Sports Spectrum as a way to introduce sports fans to Jesus, to the gospel. And so, yeah, anything you can do, we appreciate you guys and we love you so very much. And we're so thankful that you tuned into the show today. Please join us next time for another conversation. We'll see you soon.